Episode 27, T.D. Roosevelt, a historically inaccurate comic book.
Time travelers, once again, this is the Comic Book Time Machine. I'm Matt Anderson.
And this is Daniel Butcher.
And I'm just going to be honest, a little time travel action here. We just finished a really fun interview with Abel Chero,
the creator of T.D. Roosevelt, The End and the Beginning.
So this is a new comic that he has produced. We'll talk all about it, but Daniel, I think you should kind of mention, well, I think you're going to talk about it in the interview slightly, but go ahead, set the stage. How did you come across this? Why did you recommend that we interview Abel here on the show?
Well, as you know, Matt, I'm a grown man. And in a world with connected devices, I sometimes like to lay in bed late at night with my iPad sitting there in my lap and searching the internet. Specifically, I like to go out there hoping my wife doesn't catch me as I'm on Kickstarter.
Yes, Kickstarter, the well-known website in which you can help people kickstart their projects. Maybe it's a music album. Maybe it's a book. Maybe it's a comic book.
And sometimes, again, hoping the wife doesn't find me doing this, I like to search comics on Kickstarter. And I found a comic last summer that was the first comic I've ever actually backed on Kickstarter.
Fun. And you liked it so much, you recommended it to me, and then we decided we're interviewing the creator on this show.
Absolutely.
So, we actually already did it.
It's done. It's in the can.
The interview was fun. So, let's right now go to that interview with our friend, Abel Chero.
All right, time travelers. We are now here with our... Matt, is this our first ever guest?
Well, first ever on this show, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is kind of an exciting moment.
Yeah. You know, Daniel and I have interviewed people on other podcasts before, but this is the first time on the Comic Book Time Machine that we've had a guest.
So, we would like to welcome Abel Chero.
Welcome.
Our first ever guest. Abel, say hi to our fellow time travelers.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much. Wow. I didn't realize. What an honor.
Yeah. This is kind of a big deal for us.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, me too.
And we're excited. I'm excited about T.D. Roosevelt.
You're excited about it.
Matt just found out that he's not Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, so I'll be honest. We did say this at the beginning of the show when we did our little intro, but as I was reading it, your eyes just do tricks. You know, they play tricks on you. Yeah. So I assumed it was Teddy, and then Daniel cleared the air. No, T.D. Roosevelt.
It's so funny. When I first launched it as a Kickstarter, I got a lot of comments, like especially on Kickstarter's own like Twitter page and their Tumblr, people were being like, is that a typo? Did you guys miss that? Yeah, it's T.D. The reason being is that I wanted to make sure that, and maybe this wasn't the clearest way to do it, but that this exists as a separate entity from like the historical Teddy. It's a different world. He's a different person. He's just kind of like a noble dummy who is the real Teddy Roosevelt was definitely not by any means. And also, T.D. comes from, that was his nickname, real life Teddy's nickname when he was a kid. He was T.D. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Kind of a nod to that boyishness of him.
And as somebody with a history degree, Matt, I will say this. I've made this headcanon for me now.
Okay.
This is Theodore Roosevelt headcanon for me. I mean, why shouldn't it be?
I tried to pull a couple of historical things here and there. You know, I'm a big nut for the guy.
Yeah, I saw you did have some real life quotes in there, so that was nice.
Yeah, I guess I started reading the Edmund Morris trilogy, if you guys are familiar with it. The first one being the rise of, what is it, young Teddy Roosevelt, or it might have just been the rise of Teddy Roosevelt. And then the second one being Theodore Rex when he's in the presidency. And the third one, which is just absolutely fascinating, it's like a man off his rocker, is the Colonel Roosevelt one. And like after reading those, I was just so inspired by like what the real life Roosevelt, so much he had done. He was pretty much a superhero, and that was where the inspiration came from, to kind of like want to represent that kind of more in a comedic sort of like otherworldly, you know, way.
Well, and I get the sense you definitely have a little bit of a sense of humor.
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, hopefully it relays. Basically bad puns. That's what I'm best at.
Well, as a guy who's a big fan of the Jungle Cruise, I am first in line with my cash when I see bad puns.
Oh, man. Thank you. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. You guys do the Disney podcast too, right?
No, me and another gentleman, we do a Marvel podcast.
But okay. But Daniel is well known for his Disney blogging.
Yeah. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The Jungle Cruise. They deserve an award if there's some sort of pun award out there.
Yeah. At a certain point, I was like, I'd like to see somebody dress up as TD and just get on a Jungle Cruise boat and just spiel and pun. So.
Right. And maybe start like shooting arrows at all the animatronics.
Exactly. Exactly. So we jumped straight into your inspiration, but. Who are you for our listeners who may not know how you got into comics and this comic?
Well, I work in television, or at least I have for the past so many years. I'm taking a break from it now to work more in illustration, and I'm also writing for Nerdist, so which is kind of a weird thing I fell into because by no means do I consider myself even literate. I write and I draw, and it's always been hobbies. And honestly, I did this comic book not because I wanted to make a comic book, but because I wanted to learn how to make a comic book. It was a hobby that I'd come to, you know, when the workday was over, and just kind of relax and draw for an hour here or take a weekend there to like really try to finish a board or two, and you know, just try to do the whole thing in the traditional sense of like by hand. And not really using a computer until the last step of like tinting and things like that and just cleaning up smudges. I had like this big stack of boards and I was showing it to friends and people were kind of, I think, charmed by the looseness of it. You know, it's by no means traditional or serious or even like clean. You know, it has a very like gritty handmade look to it. And I think people actually like that. I don't know, but people told me I should do something more with it. So I launched a Kickstarter just to see if there was interest out there, feeling like, you know, there's no risk, right? If you fail, then
you've just lost your time to put it up.
Yeah. So, I guess that's where the adventure really began. But, I'm just a history nerd and a guy who likes to draw, but by no means considers himself a comic book artist or writer.
So I want to ask Daniel a question, but Abel, this will be for your benefit. So Daniel, you said that you came across this searching Kickstarter. What about the ad won you over?
Well, I will say this. When I looked at the listing, the video that you have up there is a trailer. That is probably what sold me.
Thanks.
I saw Historically Inaccurate when I was just going through the Kickstarter after I had done a search. And I was like, oh, I'd like to see a Historically Inaccurate. But then I did play the video, and I was laughing. And I think at one point you cautioned people to not buy it.
Yeah.
And it was like, and we've had a conversation in the past. There's a comic in DC right at the moment called Multiversity where they're like, don't read this comic. And it was kind of off-putting there. But the way you do it here, it's like you're totally just not taking yourself seriously.
Yeah, I wanted no responsibility for anyone's reaction to this. Like, I just wanted to preempt everybody. Like, you realize you're getting something that wasn't ever meant to be shared. And it's been really wonderful. I mean, the response has been great. I mean, obviously the Kickstarter worked, raised like 400% past the goal and thankfully finally got all the shipments out and, with only minor hiccups here and there. But yeah, that video, I think the advantage is like working in television, you get an eye for that. And I had a lot of people to bounce off the video ahead of time to make it look, you know, like, personal enough, like it wasn't too flashy and kind of also being a visual representation of what the book would be. It was fun, you know, but interestingly enough, when I go through the statistics, people only watched like only 50% of the people who watched it ever finished it. So if you're making a Kickstarter, my advice to you is keep your video like a minute tops if possible or super interesting.
How long was yours?
Mine was 2 minutes.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. That is good advice.
And again, I was just laying in bed, so I had the time.
That's the perfect audience right there.
The other reason, Matt, that I joined on this one is the reward levels. So $10 for me to get a physical copy. And Matt and I and Ben, we've been talking back and forth about some different Kickstarters. Where to get some physical copies, you were looking at like $30, $35. That's a little bit of a risk when you're looking at a Kickstarter and just kind of, in my mind, surfing. But for $10, how could I turn down $10?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really like I went back and forth about how to do that, and for a while it wasn't looking like I was going to make any, like, even break even. I was going to lose money on every single, like, $10 one that went out. But the idea was, I just wanted to share this more than anything. I was kind of like, I was taking a very calculated risk that there'd be enough people going, like, the higher ones, like the $30 options that included, like, a poster, because that's where the cost advantage starts working in my favor. It's interesting when you do a Kickstarter, there are so many companies that are, like, built off of Kickstarter business, like ancillary things, like, as soon as you launch one, people will be in touch with you about marketing, or, like, you know, getting press releases out and getting it on blogs and all these different things that they're like, you know, for only a fraction of whatever. And like, I went through and seriously did the math of, like, if it would be to my advantage to do any of that stuff. And what they were offering was, like, we can blast it out to 10,000 people. And then I was thinking, well, those people are probably going to buy the, if they buy anything, it's going to be the $10 comic. And then I'm going to be responsible for packaging 10,000 comic books at the $10 level. And it just wasn't worth my time anymore. And so I was like, look, I can do up to about, like, maybe 400 comic books I can handle as one human being before I would need to then hire another company to, like, do packaging and all the other things that come along with Kickstarter. Honestly, if I were to do it again, I don't think I would do Kickstarter, just because I didn't know what I was getting into. There were so many headaches. But looking back on it, I'm glad I have, you know, like, it's one of those things I wouldn't want to do again, but I'm glad I did it once.
What would you say is the biggest headache? Was it the packaging?
Packaging was huge. Another tip, if you're ever going to do something like this, go to the post office ahead of time with, like, what you intend to ship, and they will talk you through it. I didn't realize that ahead of time, that you can just go and, like, and consult with a postal employee. I just kind of, like, figured everything out on my own ahead of time, and then made, like, these big bubble numbers that I thought would give me enough cushion. And what happens was, like, one of the prizes that we included with all the physical copies were buttons. And I say we because there's this publisher who was helping me out and, like, kind of being a mentor through the whole process. I should give a shout out to. His name's Ryan Bradley. He's with Artistically Declined Press up in Oregon. And so they do a lot of, like, work with, you know, indie publishers. And so he was just giving me a lot of advice. And he had this guy who was making buttons. So these little buttons cost a couple cents to make each, right? And so I could order thousands of them for, like, under $100 and then throw them in with a comic book. And I was like, that's a great idea. So I did that. It cost me nothing to buy them. And then shipping them out, I learned that what it ends up doing is disqualifying all of my packages for media mail.
Oh.
So that like, one little button, or I think I shipped out four buttons with all the initial buyers. Those four buttons, weighing, like, not even an ounce, ended up costing near $1 per just the individual books being shipped out, which, like, totally ate up my entire profit margin on the singular books.
Wow.
And then on the big posters. So I went back home to, like, re-strategize about how to approach this. And I was like, well, they don't need to, like the post office doesn't need to know there are buttons in there. Maybe there's some way I can just kind of, like, sneak around it, you know? So I was trying to pull, like, a federal crime by, like, taping the buttons, like, all in a row next to the book, right? Like, along the spine. And then putting in between, like, chipboard and, like, all these other things. And I went back to the post office and with the bigger packages, which, like, the difference is seriously, it's considerable. Like, to ship, you know, the posters were, I think, about 11 by 14 or 17, something like that. And to ship them media mail is under $4. But to ship them as first class, which would be the next option, was, like, $10. Which, you know, when you're shipping out 40 of these, that's a lot to take into account suddenly. So, I go back to the post office with, like, a stack of these big ones, with the buttons hidden, and I'm like, oh yeah, they're just comic books and posters this time. And he's like, okay, that's good. Because, you know, if there are actually any buttons, and it's the same guy I worked with before. And I think he knew I had buttons in there. He's probably seen me just, like, dripping sweat. He's like, you know, if they find any buttons in there, what they will do is they're not going to charge you. They're not going to return them, but they're going to hold them at the post office. And then when people come to pick them up, they're going to charge your customers the difference.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, you know, there might be a couple buttons still in there.
Let me think about that real quick.
Yeah, so I was like, you know what, if can I like take a couple of those back? Because I noticed you like also media mail. It's open for inspection. So if you ever send anything, they you know it's and they take it really seriously if you do anything through the mail, obviously. And I was like, you know, there might be a few buttons in there. And he's like, you know what, if we find any, like, I'll let you know. But he was really chill about the whole thing. I think he kind of realized I was in a bind. And what I ended up doing was like sending out a message. So I'm sure you guys got this, but it said, hey, there was a confusion with the post office. If you get charged on the back end, just like send me a receipt and I'll PayPal you or something. But so far it hasn't been an issue. So I think I may have snuck through. I don't know.
Wow. That story is crazy.
Well, what I'm hearing here is make a comic, get rich.
Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so speaking of making a comic, how did this all start? Where did this idea first come from? Take it away.
Well, I guess we could go back maybe like 9 years. I remember Time Magazine had, like, I'd known about Teddy Roosevelt and presidents and all that stuff from history class or whatever. And I knew he was like, you know, a pretty cool guy, but I hadn't really read in depth about him. And then I remember, I think it was when the first Edmund Morris book was coming out, or it was when, like, what's her name, Candace Millard was coming out with The River of Doubt. Around that period, Time did, like, a special edition just strictly on Teddy Roosevelt, and I read it, and I was, like, completely enthralled. So I went back and read those those biographies. And then I read the Candace Millard one, and I read, like, his Rough Riders and his autobiography, and I was just completely man-crushing on this guy. And yeah, I mean, I just felt inspired. I wanted to see him as like a cartoon character. Cause it's one of those things, you know, you occasionally hear about these stories, like where a movie is based on somebody, but they have to tone it down because their real life is just unbelievable, you know? And to me, he's one of those like larger than life mythical creatures, like by all evidence, he was insane. You know, just like the amount of energy and ability to focus and to just, bulldoze through things. And yeah, I was really inspired by him, the human being, and him, the moralist, and then him, the action figure, I guess. And, I just started doodling. So first, when I was working in television, you know, we have an off season and I'd still go into the office every day, but we wouldn't be filming. So I'd just be sitting and waiting for phone calls or emails to come in for, you know, a month straight. And I started making these, just mini comics, you know, when you take like, a big piece of legal paper and fold it into 8 tiny sheets and then draw on those and just photocopying them and like zine style and sharing those with friends. And then I had an idea for like, I made 3 of those. And then I had an idea for a 4th one that involved time travel because they were all just kind of going through the traditional tropes of you know, comics and that kind of thing that you do. And it took me a couple years to finally like sit down and write it out, and it was bigger than a mini comic. So I thought, you know what, this would be a good opportunity to kind of try something on a bigger scale. So I bought some art boards at the local art store and went to town. I drew the first half in a few months, and then the second half took probably a year and a half.
Very nice. And at one point this was a web comic too.
Yeah, I mean, I put it up online the first half just because I thought maybe that would be the way to do it. I don't really know what I wanted to do, and I definitely wasn't building it regularly enough to maintain a webcomic. So now it's just an art form. I want to put it up on, like, Comixology, I think. See, you know, so it is at least around for people to buy and download. And I still have, like, tons of hard copies if people want to order it.
While you're there, why don't you tell people where they can order it from? And then we'll probably ask you again.
I'm not much of a salesman. They are available at both artisticallydeclinedpress.net, I believe. Or if you just Google Artistically Declined Press, it'll pop up. And then also through my website. And the advantage of ordering through my website is that I will include like knickknacks, like buttons, and maybe not buttons, maybe like postcards.
No buttons.
Bumper stickers, things like that. I have like extra things, and I will sign stuff. But my website is abelchararrow.com. That's ablechararrow.com.
So you've got a comic, and I'm going to argue it ends on a cliffhanger.
It does.
So
I'm sorry about that.
What's going to happen next?
What I would really want to see happen, so without any spoilers, the story is about Teddy Roosevelt traveling through time. He has to, because in a very Terminator-esque style, I just steal the story from Terminator. An assassin's been sent back in time to kill a younger version of him, so he has to go back in time to protect his younger self, but ends up getting stuck when the time machine breaks and is sent all over the place. And at the end, he is embarking for South America to go hunt a dinosaur, which has also somehow got trapped in time.
So, and why wouldn't he be?
A lot of stuff that happens in between. So if there ever was another, if I got the opportunity to return to this, I would want it to take place in him being in the River of Doubt, which is the river for people who, if you don't know this period of real Teddy Roosevelt's life, after he was in office, he was just like looking for the next big thing. I mean, he was like, I think 50 when he got out of office, still really young, had done like, you know, had existed in the highest office available to mankind, and was just kind of like kicking around, kind of depressed, looking for some sort of like ultimate way to, like almost in a suicidal search for adventure. And he decided to go to Brazil and explore an uncharted part of the Amazon. And he went with his son Kermit, I believe, and a team. And he nearly died. It was like really treacherous. And it's kind of an amazing story of survival just on its own, not to take into account that like one of the most impressive people, like politicians in history, was doing it. But I would want the story to kind of take place in that area. So it would be a jungle story with dinosaurs. It's kind of like, then I would just rip off Jurassic Park, essentially, is what would happen.
So, Matt, what did you think when you were reading along and suddenly there was a dinosaur with a president?
Yeah, you know, it definitely caught off guard. And I loved the part at the end where he's thinking about hunting them. I was interested to see what other kinds of damage could this dinosaur, who's not necessarily, well, we don't want to give too much away, but... it seems to be a haphazardly bouncing through time.
Or is it?
Or is it?
Yeah, I would say the mentality from the dinosaur is, like, he's kind of the dinosaur equivalent of Teddy Roosevelt. They're probably pretty good nemeses. Like, he is, I wouldn't say evil by any means, but he's just vicious and destructive and has no idea what he's just a big dummy, too. But like a negative dummy, unlike Teddy Roosevelt, who's a positive dummy. Yeah, so it's just like a wake of destruction by a creature that probably also just wants to get back home, but will eat anything in the meantime.
So you mentioned that maybe you'll continue. What would be – is there anything holding you back at this point to making more, or is it just the production costs and what goes into it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like time constraints a big thing right now. It's just like hustling, trying to do, you know, like just drawing for bread right now. So it would require me having like more time to sit down and do it. And then I probably would, you know, underestimate how much time it would take me. If it was like this first one, it would take me 2 years.
Yeah.
Just like on and off. And then like even if I were to do all that, I don't know if I would do a Kickstarter for it, if I would try to like fundraise it, or if I would try to like find a company that actually believed in this sort of style and look of it, that it was marketable in some way to be able to fund it.
I guess what I would tell the listeners, just in case they're worried as we're talking about, will there be more, is this this book does tell a complete story with the option to tell more. So it's not necessarily left open in the way where we need more, although I think Daniel and I would both like to see more coming from this.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for sharing that too. I think that's an important detail. I'm always bummed when you get to the end of it. Like I've almost entirely just migrated to reading like the trades because I can't do comic books anymore. They're just too many cliffhangers.
Yeah.
No closure.
Me and Matt are kind of the same way, where I think between the two of us, we only read about 5 comics month to month, and most of what we do is traits, just because we want to get that full story.
Yeah, and it's easier to keep all the details. You appreciate it more if you know, when you can see those tiny little details that you'd forget week to week or month to month.
You know, just so the listeners can get a feel for your interests and kind of what went into the book that we're talking about today. Which comics are you currently reading that are out there right now?
I'm a big Saga fan, Are you guys reading Saga?
Oh, Daniel has read most of it. I've only read the first volume.
First three trades?
Yeah, I think I'm four in. I think I'm like 6 months behind. So I think there might be one new one out there. I'm not certain. But that's just, it's so fantastic. And like, if you were to describe it, it sounds like the most ridiculous story. It's kind of a Romeo and Juliet sort of between horned people and winged people. Like, mm-hmm. It seems so like heavy-handed, but it's really well done. Really beautiful artwork. So,
is it Brian K. Vaughan, who's in Why the Last Man and worked on TV like Lost? And then is it Fiona Staples?
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful artwork. So that, Stray Bullets, I'm really excited about that being back in print.
Stray Bullets.
Prime Vignettes. Did you guys ever read that one?
Mm-mm. No, I don't think I've never checked that one out. Tell me about that.
I got really into David Lapham. But I got really into it because I got really into crime comics for a while. I have this story kicking around in my head that I kind of want to do if I do another comic book before I return to TD. I kind of want to do this one about a ghost world, but it would be a crime drama sort of thing. So as I was going around asking people about it, I was turned on to Stray Bullets, which is little short black and white vignettes. It feels very like Pulp Fiction or Vice City. And it's just like they all take place like either in a trailer park or some sort of like truck stop city in the middle of nowhere, and just like small crime, small time criminals, and how all their lives intertwine. Really beautiful. I like that. I think David Lapham writes and draws it. Simplistic artwork sometimes, but like really goes into detail when it will pack a punch. So those are like the two ones I'm regularly reading. I guess lots of graphic novels. I'm into. I really like the Asterios Polyp. Mazzucchelli? I don't know how to pronounce anybody's names. But I know he had worked on Batman for a long time and did like Paul Auster's City of Glass adaptation. And there's one more that just really lands for me. But I can't think of it at the time being.
You know, so you'd mentioned Nerdist, that you're working for them. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with Nerdist. What is your role working with them right now?
I'm a music writer, which I'm probably the last qualified person to be writing about music.
Yesterday,
I typoed Paul McCartney, Paul McCarthy, probably because my head was all stuck in history reading. But that was a really big faux pas, I think, just as a human being to confuse Paul McCartney's name on paper.
Hey, I understand. I remember McCartney all throughout the 50s was denouncing the Reds.
Right. So I write the music dispatches like Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. I just go through and find all the different news that kind of would appeal to our audience in relation to music. And then from time to time, I'll take like a little funny thing that happens like Killer Mike and Action Bronson on the Eric Andre Show. We're like trying to do a rap battle on treadmills. So that's like, that's worthy of a little quippy write up. So things like that. I've recently interviewed Roman Coppola, which was cool. Cause he's producing a Christmas record this year. Of like retro sort of Italian 60s lounge music themed like classic Christmas songs. So
you had me at lounge.
And then on Friday I was in studio for the first time to play video games with DJ Ryan Hemsworth on like Twitch TV, which is just a world I didn't even know existed.
Wow.
Like people watching other people play video games and talk about it. I've only been doing it for a few months. I really like the team. Everyone's just so positive and nice, and it's really pushed me to pretend to know about music.
There you go. So I'm going to touch on style real quick. So sure. And another question about reaction. So this is a hand-drawn comic.
Yes.
And it is a very different feel from what most of us are used to, especially if we're just reading the big two, just because it does have that more, it's got a certain comfort level. I'm missing the word that I'm looking here. It's,
It's like almost naive.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Exactly, because it doesn't have, you know, it has you as a writer and illustrator and your work into it, but it's not like it's been overproduced. So it's kind of an almost calm reaction versus some of the, you know, superhero comics that have got way too big of splash pages sometimes and have been overdone. And so between the story and the style, what has the general reaction been since people have started to get them?
What's been really nice is that people who don't like it haven't told me that. So I have a biased perception, but it's been surprisingly positive from the people who do like it. You know, they'll reach out and say that they think it's really beautiful. So that's a word I get a lot is like beautiful, you know. And I think it's just because it kind of catches you off guard. The problem I have when I look at like comic books that are out now is that I know you have incredibly skilled artists and craftsmen putting these together to make it look invisible. Like you lose the humanness of it. Like it doesn't feel like it was made by a human anymore. That it just exists within this comic book world, which is a wonderful feat. But and I wish I could draw like that, but I just can't. But with mine, you look at it and you see the weight of the pen and the pencil marks, you know, and the eraser marks and all this nonsense. And I think it gives the impression of like the sweat that went into it. You know, like I like to think, and maybe this is me like overanalyzing my own book and getting a little flowery, but like you can, when you look at the book, you see me like sitting over and drawing it and erasing it and getting upset at myself and then trying to fix my dumb mistakes and then just leaving them in because I get frustrated. You know, I never threw away any boards. I would just try to make them work. And that was kind of like, it was almost an improvised comic book. Like from page to page, I would realize things were missing or I had skipped a part of the outline and have to go back and like include details. So stylistically, I think like maybe improv is the closest thing to compare it to. It's more that than a comic book.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Okay. So at least for me, again, I'm one of those people that enjoyed it because it's you could call it corny if you wanted to, but it's just fun. And when you do see a page that's got Teddy Roosevelt and a dinosaur on it, or some of these other historical characters that you've slipped into this story, I truthfully really enjoyed it. So again, we'll make sure that in our show notes that we put a link to where it can be purchased. If you want to have a good time, I'm sad to say you're not going to make a lot of money off of them, though, because I noticed you're selling the $10 ones.
Break even, which will be nice.
So,
you know, and I just wanted to say also, I think something that really sums up the book is something you wrote near the intro. The events in this book are entirely fictional as far as we know.
I'm glad you saw that.
What was that?
I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah.
It's like in that little fine print at the very front.
Exactly. No, it was really good.
All right.
Thanks. I have like one other crazy reaction that I probably should share.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that when I first launched it, I hadn't done any research about like Teddy Roosevelt comics before this. Because like, why would you if you're inspired to make something like and you have a story in your head and I wasn't planning to share it. So I hadn't gone on like Google and been like, has anyone in the past 10 years made a comic book about Teddy Roosevelt? And I should have, maybe. Maybe it would have stopped me. And I don't know if that would have been a good thing either. But after the Kickstarter launched, you know, you get updates about like people who are tweeting about it or things like that. So I visited and I saw that a person, an actual comic book writer, like an actual paid, like this is their professional job, comic book writer, had tweeted, what an original and creative idea. And I was like really touched, like, oh my God, so the writer's name is Benito Serino. And I noticed like a lot of people like had liked his tweet or had like retweeted it or like written back to him. And so I quickly wrote like, thanks so much for your support. And then I actually went and looked at what people were responding and it was a lot of negative things like, who the hell does that guy think he is? He's stealing your idea. And like my heart just dropped.
Oh no.
So I look up, you know, his book list, Serino's book list. And sure enough, there was this book called Tales from the Bully Pulpit, which is about a time traveling Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh no!
What are the chances? And so I tweeted him again, like, "Oh, now I recognize the sarcasm." And I was like, "I swear, I had no idea about your book. I'm terrified of reading it now, to in case there are like any things that line up." And he was like really cool about it. This book came out in like 2004, I think, so he has a good decade on me. And he was like, you know, I don't own the rights to the idea of time travel or using like historical figures as, you know, as like adventurous imaginary superheroes or anything. Like they're both common comic book tropes, and it's not that bizarre to believe that two people landed on like the same sort of like, you know, system of storytelling and character. And so he was cool about it and like wished me good luck. And I went back and read his and was really relieved to find that like, thankfully, they are very different. Like his is kind of a Bill and Ted, Back to the Future referencey sort of romp about a Teddy Roosevelt, and instead of like mine has like a scientist, his has a scientist, and then there was one part where like a younger TD meets an older TD and they shake hands, and that was like too close to mine. But beyond that, his was like entirely different. So, or mine, I guess I should say, was entirely different.
Well, I'll just say earlier today, Matt and I both read a copy of Booster Gold from Futures In that was published in September. Oh, and I think you should sue DC because they had older Booster and younger Booster shaking hands. So
really?
No.
I would never sue them. I feel like that would last a whole day, and I would be living on the street.
And so, I know we're heading towards the wrap up here, and we definitely want to give you another chance to plug where people can find it. But just as a kind of closing question, I'm just interested, as you're talking about inspiration and those kind of things, I am interested. What's your first exposure to comics, and like maybe what were some of the first things you read, and kind of lead from there into how you decide you want to. Or maybe is there any specific one that led to this creation?
Yeah, I would say the comic book that I was really into growing up was, and this is a really bad. I like now everyone looks back on it as one of the worst story arcs in like comic book history. But the Spider-Man clone saga.
Oh yeah, no! That's my favorite.
No!
That's my favorite story.
Come on!
I was really into that, and then when they revealed that that Peter Parker wasn't the real Peter Parker, and it was I can't even think of his
name. Ben Reilly,
and I read an article in the New York Times that was like, there's a boycott going on against Spider-Man, and I was like, hey, you know what, I was upset about that too, I think I'll join this boycott, and I stopped reading for like ages.
Oh man, I love Ben Reilly. I love the Scarlet Spider. He's like one of my favorites.
I wanted to be the Scarlet Spider for Halloween, I remember, as a kid, but no one would know what it was because no one else was reading that series. But and then I read the like truncated clone series when it came back out about like 5 years ago.
I read that too.
Revisited. And that was nice, but the original one really like it was just all over the place, which was a lot of fun.
So I actually have those collections, and there were so many comics that came out during that time for the initial Clone Saga, and then into the time where Ben Reilly took over as Spider-Man for a while. There's 11 different, not trades, but those collections, those big kind of fat volumes, 11 of them. But like you're saying, 5 years ago or so, they came out with the nice 6-issue trade that was the original intent of the story. So yeah, that is crazy.
It's like a rabbit hole that sucked them, the entire universe, into it.
So right now Marvel has a Spider-Verse storyline going on, and Ben Reilly finally made his triumphant return to Marvel Comics.
Spoilers. Hello.
No.
I don't know.
It's a multiverse story, so you know, it's happening.
Because he's like a moody Peter Parker who has never had anything nice happen to him.
See, Ben Reilly, he's the best. Yeah. Yeah, you got to check out Spider-Verse. It's been pretty good so far.
I'm definitely going to. Thanks for bringing it to my attention.
That kind of got a little bit off track. But I love that you love that or that you read it at least. Maybe not loved it. But
you feel vindicated in your own opinion.
Yeah, because Daniel here, you might have heard him screaming.
I'm tired of hearing about it.
Yeah.
It's a little reaction, I think.
I kind of bring it up all the time.
I want to talk about Manhunter from the 1980s, but he doesn't want to talk about that.
All right. Abel, I'll stop there. I'll let you plug your book again. Tell everybody where they can find it. And
T.D. Roosevelt, it's available at Artistically Declined Press, which you can find on Google by Googling that. And it's also available on my website. at ablecharrow.com. That's ablecharrow.com. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for being on. This was fun.
Yeah, again, first interview ever, maybe our best interview so far.
I'd say so, definitely. So, all right, thanks a lot, Abel.
Thank you.
Take care.
And we're back.
Well, that got weird.
What got weird?
That whole interview.
Come on.
The minute he mentioned Clone Saga.
Oh, man. I'm so glad he mentioned the Clone Saga.
I know you're happy.
So here's, just so you know, a little bit behind the stage. We couldn't mention this while we were doing the interview. But as soon as he said there was a storyline in the 90s that no one liked, I sat up, looked Daniel in the eye.
And he had the look. He knew.
I knew it was
he
coming. He knew. So, but I mean, it turns out he didn't like it as much as me, but still.
He still wanted to be Ben Reilly for Christmas.
I'm just glad that Scarlet Spider came up on this show, which I had never had any idea that would happen. So, and I recommended Spider-Verse to him. So, also, I'd recommend it to you, audience. Check that out. It's happening right now. But Daniel, thanks for recommending this book to me. This was fun.
And I feel like we both recommend this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to support a creator.
Definitely.
Who is not DC and Marvel all the time.
Exactly.
And it's a fun book, and it's enjoyable, and it's impacted my headcanon in view of history.
And if enough people get interested in this right now, maybe we can get more, and that's what Daniel and I want. So.
Yeah, I
want
to see where this is going next, because again, Teddy's got his hat on. He's going dinosaur hunting.
Yeah. So, well, everybody, thanks so much for joining us here on the Comic Book Time Machine. You can always write us your feedback at feedback@comicbooktimemachine.com. You can also go check us out online. Daniel, we're on Twitter. Do you remember the
comic something?
It's at Comic Time.
This is what happens when Ben's not here. He does so much for me.
At Comic Time. You can do Facebook. Search us there. But for now,
be safe, kids. Make good choices.